It's now 2 o'clock, and this is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, August 9th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Scott Says Shooting Justifiable, Man Injured While Fleeing Police May 31st, by Tony Reed of the Herald and Review. Decatur. The Decatur detective investigated after he shot and wounded a suspect this spring has been cleared by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, who said Tuesday that the shooting was a justifiable use of force. Detective Jeffrey Hockaday was placed on administrative duties after wounding Donald Redman in the back after firing at him 3 times during a foot chase on May 31st. Police have said Redman, 33, was armed with a 9mm handgun. In a statement, Scott said Shockady reasonably believed that the force he used was necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or another when he shot Redman. Scott said he could not reveal more details because of pending criminal charges against Redman. Police said both Redman and Dallas C. Voorhees, 30, had handguns when they were stopped near the N. Henry block of South Webster Street in a car holding 26 bags of crack cocaine. Both men ran from the vehicle and were taken into custody after a short pursuit, according to police statements. Scott cleared Huckaday based on information gathered in a report into the shooting prepared by the Illinois State Police investigators. It is standard procedure for state police to investigate officer-involved shootings. Janelle Norman, NAACP Decatur Branch President and one of the community leaders working with police to provide accurate information about the case, said there are still questions about how Redman came to be shot in the back. Scott said he had outlined all he could say in the printed statement accompanying his decision on the shooting investigation, which also included copies of sworn police affidavits relating to the charges against Redman and Voorhees. He said he did not hold a press conference because he could not answer questions about the shooting circumstances until the pending cases are resolved. Police Chief Jim Goetz said Hockaday was covered by the same legal restrictions the state's attorney had cited and would not be able to make any comment. Goetz said he is looking at the feasibility of taking action in another area, equipping his officers with body cameras. I am a supporter of body cameras, Goetz said. I think, overall, they are helpful to everyone. Pre-trial schedule. Recovering from his wound, Redman was arrested as he was released from HSHS St. Mary's Hospital on June 4th. He pleaded not guilty June 28th to charges of unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, armed violence, and being an armed habitual criminal. Voorhees, who police say was driving the car involved in the traffic stop, was charged with unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, armed violence, and possession of a weapon by a felon. He also pleaded not guilty to all charges on June 28th. Both Redman and Voorhees are being held in the Macon County Jail. Redman's pretrial is scheduled for August 14th, and Voorhees' pretrial scheduled for August 15th. Redman's lawyer, Scott Reuter, said Tuesday evening he was not free to comment on the case and the developments because of legal rules. An attorney for Voorhees could not be reached for comment. Patrol Officer Todd Klein, president of the Police Benevolent and Protection Association Unit 39, said he cannot comment on any department-related issues, especially one involving an ongoing case involving the state's attorney's office. The Herald and Review filed a request through the Freedom of Information Act, seeking video footage of the incident from police vehicle cameras, but the request was denied because of the pending investigation. Melvin Cox, 45, who lives across the street from where Redman was shot, said his family recently moved to Webster Street. Cox described the neighborhood as quiet and said he and his family enjoyed their friendly neighbors, who always said hi and wave. He said his opinion of the neighborhood hasn't changed after the incident. "This is a good neighborhood, a great neighborhood, no problems," he said. "Me, my wife, and 3 kids mind our business." More questions ahead. Scott and Getz praised the efforts of the community group called the Area Leaders Educators Response Team, ALERT, which was formed in 2015 to spread accurate information in the event of high-profile incidents involving police and the black community. Hockaday is white, Redman is black. Norman, who helped form the ALERT team, said she accepted the pending court cases imposed legal barriers on what could be revealed now. But, she said, important questions will have to be answered at some point. "We have an interest in knowing where the bullet wounds occurred and whether there was excessive force used. We very much want to know why Redman was shot in the back. Why we didn't get an answer to that." Oh, but we didn't get an answer to that, Norman said. The state's attorney stressed that he couldn't have those discussions with us. Norman said members of the team had not been given any information beyond what has been released to the public. Another team member, Caring Black Men founder Jeffrey Perkins, said ALERT will continue to respond as the case develops. He expects all of the information the team members and the public want to know will come to light during legal proceedings for Redman and Voorhees. "We have issues regarding officer-involved shootings all over the country," Perkins said. "We just want to stay on top of it while these things happen, and we want to adjust in the best way we can." Norman and Decatur Police Department had founded ALERT in 2015 after several high-profile police-involved shootings nationwide that sparked civil unrest, including the 2014 killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, the suburb of St. Louis. ALERT members are notified when incidents such as the officer-involved shootings occur, allowing them to hear some details of what happened and spread those to their schools, churches, and neighborhoods. Norman said the group will be looking for more information in this latest case. "We will continue to seek answers," she said. She said that meant being willing to wait until the court cases against the suspects are heard and to see they get a fair hearing. "We want the process to be fair on both sides, but we do have questions and we want answers for," she said. In the meantime, Norman said she wanted to see the police equipped with body cameras. "That's something our community should push for. I understand the cost, but having body cameras would clear up what actually happened at the scene, and there wouldn't be any questions about it," she said. The ALERT team was also heavily involved in the response to Decatur's last officer-involved shooting on July 11, 2016. Officer Andrew Whitmer shot and wounded Lonnie D. Mitchell, 40, who police say was armed with a knife strapped to his wrist and a BB gun that looked like a semi-automatic handgun. No charges have been filed against Mitchell after he recovered from his wounds. And Scott said that he therefore had been free to talk about that case. After the incident, Getz had said he was considering body cameras for his department. He said Tuesday that his concerns remain the cost, which may be as much as $200,000 to equip all his officers. He said it's not just the price of the cameras, but also information storage, software and maintenance agreements. But towards the end of the year, as I put my 2018 budget together, I definitely want to look at that cameras and see where I can go from there, he added. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf praised alert team members for helping spread accurate information and the community for having patience as the state police investigation progressed. We've seen in other cities that misinformation gets out and resulted in violence and damage, she said. The police department strives to be as transparent and open as possible, and I think the alert group makes a big difference. Reporters for this story included Justin Kahn, Jaylen Cook, Claire Hettinger, and Tom Lisi. The next article is about education. It's entitled, Students Get an Extra Edge. Millikan Program Helps Freshmen Prepare for College, by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review. Decatur. Nick Perry credits Millikan University's EDGE program for starting him off on the right foot in his college career. I came in as a freshman not knowing how to do academic papers and not knowing how to do stuff like printing, said Perry, a senior football player who is planning a career in law enforcement. They gave me an upper hand on my education and taught me how to do the simplest things of college. Another asset is it taught me how to prepare myself in being a college student and also a college athlete, he added. I think the best thing the EDGE program has taught me is time management. Excellence Developed Through Growth and Experience, or EDGE, has been around for several years but underwent a redesign this year. Students often, through a variety of criteria, come to campus early and move into the residence halls before the other freshmen and underclassmen arrive. They spend several days with a jam-packed schedule taking classes with their individual small groups, learning their way around campus, getting to know their mentors and paraprofessionals who will help them navigate their freshman year, and earning college credit. EDGE is different from first week, in which all freshmen participate, because EDGE is targeted to specific students who may have more challenges adjusting to college life than their classmates for any number of reasons. The Office of Admissions and the Office of Student Success work together to identify the incoming freshmen who might benefit most from being part of EDGE. This year, 165 students are part of the EDGE program from a freshman class of almost 500. And as Perry, who is in his third year as a mentor, said, learning time management is one of the key components of EDGE. Once classes start August 21st, students must find themselves overwhelmed with classes, homework, sports, and social life. They also have to remember that their parents aren't at college to do the mundane things for them like laundry. They have to learn they can't stay up all night, said Corbin Farmer, a first-year mentor. You can't get by on 2 hours sleep. Farmer, a presidential scholar who is a philosophy and math double major, minoring in communications, and working toward a career in not-for-profit business management, knows all about juggling a busy schedule. EDGE students meet regularly throughout their freshman year at study halls with their mentors and factory advisors. Because they get to know the students so well, those mentors and faculty can usually tell immediately if someone is amiss. Something is amiss. When someone is usually bubbly and talkative and suddenly they're quiet, They know something went wrong, said Carrie Pearson, director of the Student Success Office. By being available and asking questions, mentors and faculty can help students regain their footing if they're falling behind or are losing head or heart. The goal is to have students graduate in the typical 4 years of college. Another key component of EDGE is making a smooth transition from high school to thinking like a college student, said Blake Woodard, Assistant Director of Student Success. Students learn about critical thinking, academic papers, and how to cite sources, how to find good and trustworthy sources, how to set up their college email, and the importance of checking it daily. Professors often send messages to students through email, including assignments and due dates. It's also imperative for students to understand that emails to professors are a professional exchange and are not written the way email or text with their friends. Woodard is gratified when he sees EDGE students answering questions and helping other freshmen during the year, too. Coming to campus early means they've already figured out a lot of where it is and who do I ask answers before classes begin. The next article is entitled RCC Partners with Training Center. Law Enforcement Facility expected to open in October, by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review. Decatur. New deputies for the Macon County Sheriff's Office are training in DuPage County right now. Far from home and without on-site residence halls, those officers are staying in hotels, and the Sheriff's Office is paying for lodging and food. That will soon change when the new Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center opens in October. This one allows the opportunity for the dormitory to be right there, said Sheriff Thomas Snyder, who has been involved in the planning of the facility. For instruction cohesiveness, it's all in one place, and it's great. The facility is state-of-the-art, and what I like about this place is its design and versatility in all aspects. We have court security, corrections, and basic law enforcement training, he continued. If we need to put on a training class for other aspects, we can do that. It's absolutely a dream for law enforcement. The center is a partnership between Richland Community College and the Illinois Law Enforcement and Training Standards Board. The initial concept and financial support is thanks to the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, which donated $15 million to fund the project. The two-structure, 5-acre site sits along US 51 near Grove Road and includes a two-story dormitory, training building, and outside track. The training building contains multiple classrooms, scenario-based training rooms, a physical skills and exercise room, indoor firing range, administrative offices, and a conference room. The academy will house 80 to 100 candidates year-round who will each attend 12 to 14-week sessions. It will be owned and managed by the training board, and operations and maintenance will be handled by Richland. Richland President Chris Valdez said the partnership is mutually beneficial and fits in with Richland's mission to meet the educational and training needs of the region. Law enforcement departments from throughout Illinois would use the facility, Snyder said. Will be especially convenient for the sheriff and other local departments. The facility will have the capability to train any department's new officers. It will also offer ongoing training for experienced officers, too, he said. When you're first hired, you go through the basic academy, which the standard board requires, 14 weeks long, Schneider said. Once that's complete, you take the state certification exam, and candidates are back with their own department for the field training program. In addition, then, after you're an officer, each year you're going through different trainings. This will have the ability to provide ongoing training, but also for executives, command-type training, so much opportunity for advancement and professional educational services. I can't tell you how impressed and happy I am that Richland is part of this. It just brings everything home to all of us who are in law enforcement. Schneider said he anticipates a formal ceremony will be scheduled once the center is complete and ready to open. The next article is entitled, Dove Taking Over Tour, Social Service Agency to Manage Heritage and Holly, by Justin Kahn of the Herald and Review. Decatur. Dove Incorporated Executive Director Christine Gregory announced Tuesday that Dove will be taking over sponsorship of the annual Heritage and Holly Historic Homes Tour. NWRAPS, the Near Website Restoration and Preservation Society, had run the tour since it began in 1991. Using the proceeds to fund neighborhood revitalization projects. NWRAPS member Donna Williams said the organization is turning its attention to neighborhood and community issues. The tour was starting to distract from our focus, Williams said. But we're glad to see Dove is going to energize the tour. Over the years, Heritage and Holly has been an ongoing oral history project. Every time someone opens their home on this tour, little bits of pieces of history come out. NWRAPS will continue to assist with the tour this year, which will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, November 24th, and noon to 6 p.m. on Saturday, November 25th. Dove will take over full-time in 2018. The announcement was made at the press conference Tuesday held at Dove's Domestic Violence Shelter. Dove is a social services organization that includes, among its services, a domestic violence program, an early education program, financial and housing help for those in need, and a large volunteer program. We've always been involved in neighborhoods and trying to build up this community, Gregory said. I was approached with the opportunity for Dove to get involved in another long-time Decatur tradition and thought it was a great idea. Dove Governing Board President Jason Butterick and the Heritage and Holly Tour is a good fit with Dove's mission. We both focus on restoring area homes and families inside and out, Butterick said. Williams said, though numbers have fallen in recent years, Heritage and Holly has raised as much as $8,000 and had always at least given in a few thousand. She said, with Dove's volunteer base, there's potential to make more. Gregory said the goal was to have 700 people attend this year, with tickets at $18 in advance and $20 at the door. The homes on the tour have changed often through the years. Last year they were Arthur Waite House, 815 West Main Street, Staley Museum, 361 North College Street, Park House, 307 West William Street, Milliken Homestead, 125 North Pine, Gebhardt House, 849 West William Street, and Edward D. Matz House, 17 Lincoln Place. Gregory said the tour would also now include information about Dove's services. We'll still be touring basic homes, historic homes, and places of architectural significance around town, Gregory said. But we'll also be highlighting the ways in which Dove has helped build and be part of the community. Williams said NW Wraps will return to its roots and concentrate on revitalizing the west end of Decatur. We have a number of Milliken professors in the near west area of Decatur, Williams said. They're going to be focusing on neighborhood issues like condition or housing and crime, all the grassroots things that can be done to keep a neighborhood vital. The next article is entitled, Man Suspected of Sixth Burglary, Man's Fingerprints Found at the Scene, by the Herald and Review staff. Decatur. Months after being arrested for his involvement in five burglaries in 2016, police said officers arrested a 24-year-old man in another burglary that happened around the same time as the others. The man faces a preliminary charge of burglary, which is subject to review by Macon County State's Attorney's Office. He was held in the Macon County Jail on $10,000 bond Tuesday. Responding to an active security alarm, police found a broken window around 3:27 a.m. November 22nd in the 800 block of West Macon Street, according to a signed police affidavit. The homeowner told police that the house was being renovated and unoccupied, the affidavit said. Nothing was taken from the house, the affidavit said, but police found a large pair of bolt cutters, an empty bottle of liquor, and white wire strippers underneath the broken window. Those items were sent to be processed at the Illinois State Police Crime Lab, which found the suspect's fingerprints on the liquor bottle and bolt cutters. He was arrested at the intersection of West Macon Street and South Hawthorne Avenue on Monday. The man was previously arrested for five burglaries that happened between November 16th and November 18th, 2016. The affidavit said those burglaries were in the same general area as the one connected with his recent arrest. He pleaded guilty to one count of burglary and received probation on April 5th. And now, a news brief about a Decatur man being shot. A 23-year-old man was shot near the intersection of West Decatur and Monroe Streets Monday, according to written police reports. The incident occurred between 1:15 p.m. and 1:34 p.m. in the 500 block of West Decatur Street near the Monroe Street intersection, reports said. Police have not responded to messages seeking more information. The Decatur Fire Department confirmed Monday that a victim was taken to a local hospital by ambulance from a crime scene near the area. Representatives of Decatur Memorial Hospital, HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, and HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield all said the man was being treated there Tuesday morning. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, August 9th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. I'll be back with part two after the break.